Welcome to
Midnight Circle.
From your friends at House of Whimsical Terror.
A chat about spooky topics.
And this week's topic is...
one of our favorites.
Yes.
Victoriana and spiritualism.
Yeah.
I love this topic.
I do too. I think this topic exemplifies what we mean by whimsical terror.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that really beautiful but scary at the same time, kind of like the TV series Penny Dreadful.
Yeah.
You know, everything's beautiful. It takes place in, you know, the Victorian times, mm-hmm. and has all of that richness in it. So it's really pretty.
Yeah.
But really scary.
Really. Really,
yeah,
scary and creepy.
Lace and brocade and velvet and, you know,
yeah,
pretty things, but they're also scary.
Yeah. So I'm really excited about doing this topic, but this topic is very, very broad, and it takes place over the course of, you know, decades.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried to find a few things that I found that I thought were curious or intriguing,
yes,
to share with our listeners.
Like
so, so some of the stuff that I found was like during the mid 19th century, children under the age of five were dying at a rate of 20 to 40%.
20 to 40%.
Yeah, very, very high mortality.
Whoa.
Rate for children.
What do you think caused that? Do they know?
I didn't look up the causal factors, but there were so many choices of things during,
yeah,
that time.
It could have been corsets had anything to do with it.
It could have been anything from birth challenges, the lack of germ theory, to, you know, issues with just kind of living,
yeah,
during that period.
The use of arsenic in wallpaper and,
yes,
other things.
Yeah.
They used it for, you know, creating that beautiful green. They used,
yeah,
verdigris and arsenic. And so you can imagine an entire house filled with, mm-hmm, the most popular colored wallpaper,
right,
sort of, you know, brocade looking. Mm-hmm. Was that industrial?
That Hunter Green.
That German,
beautiful,
industrialist.
Oh, Sattler.
Sattler.
Yeah.
Who found that way to bring out the,
mm-hmm,
the green. Can you imagine your house being covered in arsenic?
No.
No. That idea. No.
Yeah. That, you guys don't do that.
Yeah, no.
We're telling
do
you.
Not.
It's a very bad idea. So, amidst this high child mortality rate, Mary Todd Lincoln, the first lady, she actually lost three of her four children during her lifetime, and she sought the help of mediums to communicate with them beyond the veil.
Hmm. Interesting. Kind of, yeah, like Nancy Reagan, first lady of President,
right,
Ronald Reagan, consulted...
Mrs. Quigley.
Mrs. Quigley, the astrologist.
Yes.
Interesting.
So maybe it's not so off the mark,
no,
to have these things occur.
Yeah, and we act like we aren't all into those things.
Right.
Like, that is ridiculous.
That's ridiculous, but it isn't, because we're fascinated by it.
Yes.
So this situation with Mary Todd Lincoln, because she lost so many people... she actually held seances in the White House and later hoped to be able to connect with her assassinated husband as well, President Lincoln.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, her grief undoubtedly propelled her to seek her loved ones out after they passed from this life. I mean, I can't even imagine that much loss in that short period of time, that poor woman. It's very, mm-hmm, and under such tragic, mm-hmm, circumstances.
Exactly.
So many people actually believe that it was the collective grief of the child mortality rate in general that made spiritualism popular.
Interesting.
And I thought maybe you could tell us a little more about how to define spiritualism.
Yeah, and I can't, but I want to tell you that things that were popular during the, you know, spiritualist movement or popularity,
mm-hmm,
were holding seances,
yeah,
finding ways to communicate with the dead,
mm-hmm,
tarot, which is much older than spiritualism,
yeah,
became very popular again,
yeah,
those types of things,
all
which
kinds
are,
of like esoteric knowledge, seeking esoteric knowledge.
Yes, which is really very interesting to me.
Yeah, and in today's, I guess contemporarily, it would be more like mysticism or metaphysical studies and all of that is, you know, the birth of spiritualism brought forth.
Right, right, right.
These opportunities.
Exactly.
But I do think that, like, spiritualism was very accepted at that time, and probably more so because so many people were experiencing the loss of loved ones.
Yeah, and things that were sort of, you know, like the Penny Dreadfuls that had, you know, creatures in them and kind of scary supernatural things were very popular. So kind of looking at what might be in the afterlife. And no one knows when spiritualism, like, first began.
Oh, right.
But there are the Fox sisters, and they certainly gave it a push forward into acceptance. So the Fox sisters, Maggie and Kate, were youngsters that said they could communicate with the entity that would make a loud knocking sound in their house. They called it Mr. Splitfoot.
Which is in itself rather terrifying.
Yes, and reminiscent of the way we think of, like, a Lucifer or...
Yeah, actually, when I read that, I was like, oh, I don't remember ever reading the name by which they, you know, identified this entity or this spirit that they communicated with. And I was like, oh, wow, that's terrifying. And yet, these little girls were like, yeah, we're good. We're going to talk to this guy.
For a long time.
Yeah.
Because, as it turns out, so eventually Mr. Splitfoot identified that he had been murdered and buried in the cellar of their home. The girls eventually moved out of the haunted home, but the knocking and tapping followed them. So he was not attached to that home. He was something they conjured or... they became so popular that their wonderful phenomena...
Yeah, they're wonderful phenomena.
Yes, that they entertained paying crowds for over 40 years. Crowds hopeful to receive messages from lost loved ones.
Yeah, and the fact that they referred to what the Fox sisters did in terms of their mediumship or...
you said forms. What the Fox.
What the Fox?
It sounded like something different. What the Fox sisters did.
It just depends on where I pause. And there are so many pauses when I speak that you just never know what you're going to hear.
No.
That's hysterical. But the fact that their channeling or mediumship or whatever was occurring with them, as it was defined, was referred to, like, in quotes, the wonderful phenomena, also indicates the level of acceptance that society had for the concepts of spiritualism.
Yes.
You know?
And I think about Mr. Splitfoot specifically is reminiscent of a story that's very popular in this region, kind of southern Arizona, northern Mexico, and probably other places as well, but it's really a story that's told over and over again. I heard the story from a nun when I was in first grade, had to go to catechism, and she told the story, which I found fascinating and terrifying at the same time. So she told us, and I've heard the story so many times since then, that there was a young woman, maybe 15, 16 years old, and there was a big dance in town that everyone was going to. And of course she wanted to go. But her mother was very sick and she had to stay home and take care of her. So she was very disappointed, but, you know, she wanted to take care of her mother as well. So, and her mother told her she couldn't go, that she had to stay home and take care of her. So she was doing work around the house and had to go outside for some reason. And she heard, horse's hooves off in the distance. And suddenly this very handsome man came in riding this beautiful horse, and he looked down at her and he said, "Why aren't you at the dance? I'm heading there myself." And she said, "Oh, I'm not going. My mother's sick. I have to stay home." And he said, "Is she asleep?" And the girl said, "Yes, she's asleep." And he said, oh, well, you can go to the dance for a little while mm-hmm. and then come back and take care of her. She's asleep anyway. Uh-huh. And the girl said, I really can't. So he convinced her. He said, I will ride you there, and you just get up on the back of my horse, and we'll be there and back in no time. And she said, well, I haven't prepared something to wear. And he said, oh, I have this beautiful dress that I happen to have because I was going to sell it. And he pulls it out of his, his bags, and he hands it to her, and it's a beautiful dress. Mm-hmm. So she puts it on over what she's wearing, and he pulls her up onto his horse, and they go to the dance.
Qué romántica.
So romantic, yes. Yeah. So they get there, and they walk in, and she's so proud. She's feeling so much pride. She's with this very handsome man, and she looks beautiful. So they go in, and they start dancing, and she's looking around at the people who've known her whole life. You know, it's a small village, and they have, you know, all of her friends and family are there. And they start to kind of back away, and she's like, oh, they think we're so beautiful. They just want to move apart so that they can watch us dance. So she's smiling and dancing happily and kind of looking over to see how people are reacting. Mm-hmm. And she notices that they are looking horrified. And they're not looking up at their faces. They're looking down. And she's like, why are they looking down as though they're looking at our feet?
Huh.
And she hadn't changed her shoes, just the dress. So she looked down to see, you know, what her feet looked like. And she saw that the man she was dancing with didn't have legs at all. He had hooves.
Cloven
hooves.
Yeah. Mr. Split Foot.
Mr. Split Foot.
Oh, no.
Which is kind of a bastardization of the of Pan, who is kind of a lovely, happy, joyful creature. But
yeah, and probably a different Midnight Circle topic.
Oh, probably, yes.
Actually.
Yes.
That would be great. I think we should do that. But yeah, that is actually, that's a very creepy, spooky way for those nuns. Those darn
don't
nuns.
Don't be prideful and stay home and take care of your mom.
That's right. They'll just tell you a parable. So
I would have done when I was 15. I never would have gotten.
You wouldn't have gone with the guy?
Oh, hell no.
No, me either.
Yes, you would.
Well, okay. That's probably true. All right. You would have covered for me, though.
Yes, I would.
Yeah, totally. All right. So back to our topic. So during and after the time of the Civil War, there were over 750,000 soldiers' souls haunting the country.
Whoa.
That's because there's so many men who were lost, soldiers that were lost in the war. And I don't think people are capable of wrapping their minds around
how many people died.
No, they have no. It's very difficult to imagine what that would mean in a community, in a world, in a nation.
Right. So, Mary, what was the Civil War about?
Slavery, Esther.
Thank you. Yes.
Slavery for one, Esther.
Yes.
Slavery.
The right answer, Mary.
The right answer.
Thank you for giving us the right answer.
Yes. So, what happened then as a result of all of this death and all of the loss is that mourning photography became popular. So in mourning photography, or this type of photography, the deceased person would be set up to look as though they were still alive, and the photographs would then be taken of them. And
those are just fascinating photos.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, the more fascinating ones to me are the ones where the living family members are also in the photos.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them, it's hard to tell. It's actually hard to tell which of these children is deceased. And some of them, there's more than one child, which is really terrible. But then there's the ones of, like, there's also the ones, of course, of the soldiers, of the adults, family members. But the ones with the children, again, spooky children's things.
Spooky children.
That's such a topic. Mm. That's probably a whole Midnight Circle, too.
I have an old family photo with a great aunt and uncle holding their dead baby. It was the first baby, and it passed, and they just look so absolutely devastated.
Empty, right? Mm. Yeah, it's such a dramatic hole, you know, in your heart, in your life. Yeah, very sad. And then spirit photographers, those were the next, kind of the next evolution of photography at the time. They became popular. And so as spirit photographers, they said that they could take photos in which the dead would show up in spirit form in the photos. And there, of course, are many examples of these photos around. And they actually look quite realistic. And some of them, maybe they are.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, some of you them, know? Right, they have been debunked.
Yeah.
And some are obvious fakes, but yeah. some...
Hmm. You really have to look at them. Like, if you guys Google these spirit photographs.
Yeah.
They're really, they're quite remarkable. They're really, it's hard to believe they're not real. Yeah. Some of them really, truly amazing. And to be able to give comfort and hope in that way to someone,
I guess it's worth it.
It's hard for me to have any judgment about that.
Yeah.
Because like, I think anytime we're bringing good into the world, it's good.
Yeah. And providing comfort for parents.
Yeah. Comfort for parents around those just tremendous losses.
So someone who might disagree with you about the faked photos was Harry Houdini.
There's always somebody.
Yeah, but he was kind of awesome. He was that famous magician, and he spent a great part of his life trying to disprove the manifestation of psychical phenomena. He even offered financial rewards in concert with Harvard and MIT to anyone who could produce activity that would pass the scrutiny of testing. And there were some who could not be debunked, like Miss Lenora Piper, but she never won the prize money.
Ah.
Go figure. But I think I have to say with Houdini, even though he, you know, is partnering with those institutions, he really was looking for someone who could help him speak to the dead. He was very interested in speaking with his mother.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like he believed they were all wrong or that it was impossible. He was looking for the real deal.
He was his whole life. And there's a story about him telling his wife that when he passed, he would say if he were able to come through and come back to communicate
through
with
a medium.
Yeah, through a medium. He would say a specific word. And then she would know it was him. But to my understanding, she never got to experience that. So he never was able to come back and communicate with her.
Right.
But they had like a whole thing around it. Because he really truly wanted to believe that it was possible.
Oh.
Yeah.
That was kind of a sad story. Thank you.
It really was. Sorry.
So there are spiritualist communities that exist in America today.
Yes, there are.
There is the Lily Dale in New York and the
Casadega
in Florida. And they have very strict and rigorous expectations of the mediums that they are affiliated with. And you can visit many of them for a session.
You can. You can look it up online and make arrangements. And their folks are all, you know, they go through a very strict and rigorous training. You're looking at me like you're ready to go to Lily Dale.
Oh, no, I just had to make such
a... Because I'm like, okay, let's go. We're ready.
It would make such a cool, we started doing those little mini videos. But it'd be fun to like go to one and see if they would allow us to
interview them.
Not interview them, get a session.
We'll get a session.
And see
for
if they'd
sure.
allow us to tape it.
Ooh,
to video it.
That would be
it.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
Okay, maybe we'll do that.
Maybe we will.
I like it.
I don't know what the future holds, but it could probably hold something really spooky like that. Yeah. So I do know that Victoriana was filled with a lot of interesting and unusual contrivances. And so we're talking about like Victoriana right now, because like spiritualism, like it started in like the middle of, you know, the beginning, middle of the 19th century, and then it continued to thrive, right? So now as we go along and Victoria is queen, and there were a lot of interesting things around that time besides the poison household items, that one of which you mentioned. But people would do things like they were wearing taxidermied birds as fascinators and hats. So you could have a bird taxidermied and you could wear that as a hat. And that was an actual thing with their wings spread and their little bodies. You can actually look that up also. We always have such fun things to look up. Like, I don't know, my search history, it's questionable now. It's pretty questionable now.
Yeah.
So there were also mummy unwrapping parties, which is disgusting and horrible and really vexes me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
To use terminology of the time.
Yes.
Because I think that it was not good to be doing that to humans who had been wrapped for eternity.
Well, also, they're taking them out of their resting place in their home countries. And
yeah, yeah.
It's just awful.
It's awful. It's awful. British Museum. So then also they were using mummy powders or arsenic as part of curatives for different maladies. So the arsenic in the wallpaper, they probably just thought, this is great. We're going to feel great. Maybe we'll just lick the wallpaper. I don't know.
Well, that's no, how they got rid of syphilis, but it created all sorts of other issues, right?
So many issues. There are so many issues. Mm-hmm. And with that, and so many other things that today would be considered poisonous that they used as curatives.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. They also, the Victorians, enjoyed belonging to interesting clubs, some of which were dedicated to eating strange foods, and some of them were dedicated to performing esoteric rituals. So it all sounds like a good time to me.
It does.
Yeah.
I was just telling a friend about, you know this story, my grandmother was a rancher, and she used, mm-hmm. like, these really bizarre, no, they weren't all bizarre. Some of them were really amazing if they were, like, a kind of native healing techniques, but some of them were sort of rancher techniques, and one of them was getting rid of worms. She was always worried about worms in our intestinal system, even though I never had them.
Right.
But she would make us eat a bunch of, like, brown sugar or panocha, as we talk about, like, eating those little cones.
Mm-hmm, and yeah.
That was just to bring the worms out to eat it. And then she would have us line up, and she would give us a spoonful of water, sugar, and a drop of turpentine. And
wow.
Then the idea was that the worms would come out to eat the sugar, uh-huh. and then you would take the turpentine and would kill them all.
How very interesting.
Yes, which is probably why I'm mad as a hatter.
That, among other reasons, Esther, perhaps. I don't know. But that's a very rancher thing to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
She had other, like...
We can fix that with some turpentine. Yeah. Just, like, you know, pour some of that in your glass.
Yeah.
Mix it up with some sugar. They'll never notice.
No, she should have stuck to the, you know, the indigenous methods.
The indigenous herbal.
She saved us from so many things.
Sure.
And that was definitely not an indigenous ritual.
No, probably mm-hmm. not. But the fusion of culture is very interesting.
Yes.
But the herbal and indigenous stuff is all way legit and fascinating.
And a whole other midnight circle.
Mm-hmm. We got like three topics, people. Three topics. Just out of this one. I hope that you all are continuing to enjoy the Midnight Circle, because we're enjoying creating them. And we want to thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time. We'll talk to you next time. Yeah.